From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, with the Congress poised to increase military spending in the FY2019 defense authorization bill and military leaders taking steps to put the social experimentation of the Obama years behind them, well, it appears the military is on a path of restoration, both from a morale standpoint and a material standpoint. We'll talk with Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler of Missouri, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, in just a moment. Also, close to 100 members of Congress are supporting a new rule by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services that will ensure that Title X family planning funds are not used by organizations that provide abortions in the same facility. We'll talk with Congressman Ron Estes of Kansas, who is among the signers and leading this effort in Congress. Also, a stunning upset in New York this past Tuesday raises new questions about the Democratic Party and the midterm elections. Is there a civil war within the Democratic Party? Well, Tuesday's election results may help answer that question. Political strategist Chris Wilson will join us with his takeaways. And the U.S. Supreme Court made several major decisions this week that clearly shows how elections matter. We'll talk with FRC's Travis Weber about a few of those cases and what's in the pipeline before the court that makes the replacement for Anthony Kennedy so important. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And let me remind you once again, we're coming up to the end of the fiscal year. June 30th is Saturday. And we have some generous donors that have put forth a challenge match so that anything you give between now and Saturday will be doubled. Now, let me remind you that this program, Washington Watch, is made possible because of folks like you across this country that are standing with us. And if you'd like to partner with us and be a part of ensuring that this program continues and even expands, because more people need to hear from the leaders here in Washington, D.C. that are fighting for you. Faith, family, and freedom is at the focus of their mission. And so you can hear directly from them through Washington Watch. Go to TonyPerkins.com. You can make a contribution there, or we have folks standing by right now to take your phone call. Just dial the phone, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. All right, with a focus on restoring readiness to the military, the fiscal year 2019 National Defense Authorization Act has passed the House, passed the Senate. It's got to work out a few differences between the House and the Senate, and it increases funding by over $670 billion. Also, military officials earlier this week, the Army saying they're moving away from the transgender training that was mandatory, moving the military back to focusing on its mission. What a novel idea. That mission to fight and win wars. Joining us now is Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler. She represents the 4th Congressional District of Missouri. And as I mentioned, she serves on the House Armed Services Committee. And she's also the chairwoman of the Values Action Team, which FRC is involved in. Vicki, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be here.
All right. Before we get into the military issue, which I you and I have talked about quite a bit, and I want to talk about that, but I just want to get your initial thoughts with yesterday's announcement about the retirement of Anthony Kennedy, and how significant that's going to be going into the fall.
Well, it's a huge. It is very encouraging opportunity that President Trump has to further solidify the court with constitutional conservatives who uphold the values that many of us hold dear, and certainly our framers of the Constitution did, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I have been pleased with Justices Kennedy's decisions this week relating to religious liberty and last week, but in the past, it was very disappointing how he cited promoting abortion and supported same-sex marriage. And, you know, our country has had ramifications from that. And, so that's disappointing. So I wish him well in his retirement, but I'm looking forward to seeing who the nominee will be from President Trump, and hope that it's in the mold of Neil Gorsuch, and we can further have a court that upholds our values.
Yeah, I think you know, the president committing to pick a candidate off his list, a list that people have had a chance over the last 2 years to comb through. And you're absolutely right. Neil Gorsuch was a stellar pick in terms of we're looking for someone that will simply uphold and interpret the Constitution. We're not looking for, you know, quote unquote, a conservative or a liberal that will legislate the things that we want. That's what you guys do. You do the legislation. They simply do the interpretation. In speaking of that, we've had the courts increasingly intervening in our nation's military. And now we actually may be back on a path of restoration for our nation's military. 2 years in a row now, if this NDAA is funded or approved, we're going to see increase in funding to our nation's military, which, you know, they desperately need. But combined with that, we see under this administration them moving away from the social experimentation, which was a priority under the previous administration. So things are looking up for our nation's military, aren't they?
Oh, they really are, and it's so good to see the Defense Department, the Pentagon, once again fighting on, focusing on what they should be doing, which is, as you said, fighting and winning wars and keeping our nation safe. And so with the increased dollars that we are giving back to the military, we feel like we're going to start moving to restoring the readiness that has been lost. And we have been in a very serious condition. Many Americans don't know that. But over the last 8 years, under President Obama, with the cuts to the military, our readiness has degraded, you know, such that there were times when pilots couldn't even train, or the time in the cockpit was very little. We last year, had 80 people that died in training accidents, and only 21 died in combat, and that's due to planes falling out of the sky and equipment failing, and that's just not right. I mean, we owe it to the parents of these service members, the spouses, and the members themselves who sign on the line and dedicate their potentially life to defending this nation, that they're going to have equipment that works, that they're going to have the best training possible to meet whatever threat comes their way, and they're not going to have equipment that's going to fail them. So it's time to restore this readiness, to modernize and to keep up with the advances of our strategic competitors now. I think that's the official term. I won't call them enemies, but we have the rise of China that are investing billions and billions of dollars in cutting-edge technology and new ways to fight wars. And, of course, they are stealing a lot of our technology through cyber and trying to jump ahead of us. They're building islands in the South China Sea, and it's very concerning, you know, whether it's hypersonics or artificial intelligence or directed energy. I mean, the weapons of the future, I mean, it's a race to keep up with them and with others. And, you know, Russia, we have Iran, we have ISIS still, and, of course, North Korea. So it's time that we focus on carrying out the mission, and the new Department of Defense under Secretary Mattis and President Trump is doing that, and I couldn't be more happy.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest in this first segment, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler of Missouri, member of the House Armed Services Committee, and also, as I mentioned, chairman of the Values Action Team, which seeks to put the proper emphasis and on the values issues and keeps that before the congressional leadership. You know, in the last couple of years, the military has had a very difficult time in meeting their recruiting numbers. I would have to think that when the military returns to its mission and it has the resources to do so, that's going to help with recruitment. I mean, you're going to have a military now that's funded so that people can actually do the training and have the equipment they need, and they're going to focus on that rather than this nonsense that the Obama administration focused on, the, you know, the whole sexual sensitivity, the transgender agenda. So I think that maybe this could solve the military's recruitment retention process, or at least a problem, at least take them in that direction.
Sure, and morale is a big part of that, and I think morale has suffered. I know it has under these policies of President Obama, People who enter the military want to serve their nation, and they want to focus on taking on the threats that are out there, keeping their family safe. They don't want to have to deal with these side issues and that make it very difficult on a day-to-day basis to function, whether it be in the barracks or just the day-to-day what they need to do. And so I'm encouraged by that. You know, there's a lot of choices that people have nowadays where they could work. We have 6.9 million
right.
jobs available and open in this country.
Right.
And so we need to make sure that the military is an attractive place to work and, like you say, has equipment that's going to function properly and be a place where people feel like they are making a difference and they can focus on the mission. And that's what we're moving towards now, and I'm very encouraged by these positive changes and hope that it will help us encourage more people to enter the military and be willing to serve our country.
You know, that's a really good point, that where we are now looking at an unemployment rate that's almost at a historic low, at least for some demographics in our society, the competition there is very steep for the military. And so, you know, people join the military because they want to be a part of something that is significant, that's doing something in terms of defending the nation and the values that we stand for. And so when they're distracted with all of these other pet projects of the Democratic Party, it diminishes that role. And so I think you're absolutely right. They've got to return to their mission if they want to be able to attract the bright and best in our society today when it comes to the future careers that these people are going to choose.
Absolutely.
Vicki, we've got a couple more minutes left. I want to just talk about the values issues that you spearhead as the leader of the Values Action Team. Going into the midterm elections, what we're actually seeing in some of these primaries is that these values issues really matter. That these are things that motivate, encourage people to turn out and vote and engage in this process. And we're actually seeing a lot happen in Congress, not necessarily reported on, but in terms of values, I tell you what, the last 18 months has been a major turnaround.
It is encouraging, and these are matters of the heart, and they're matters that are foundational to our nation. And we need more people serving in office who are willing to stand up and fight for them and to be bold and say, this is what I believe, and yes, I am a Christian, and I am pro-life. And people respect that, and they will support that. We shouldn't shy away from these things. And it is encouraging to see that people are getting out and supporting people who are running for office that uphold these values. And we have made a lot of strides, and we have more that we can do if we get a few more people here. So I'm very hopeful at the direction we're going.
All right. Vicki, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate your leadership on the Hill and keeping the Congress and the leadership focused on the values issues.
You bet. Thank you, Tony. Have a good day.
All right, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler of Missouri. All right, don't go away, folks. There's a lot more Washington Watch to come. We're going to be talking about Title X funding, an effort by members of Congress to support an effort to ensure your money's not funding abortion. That's next. Don't go away.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television and social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is false? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate the challenging topics surrounding human sexuality. We are all created in the image and likeness of God, and all people are equal in dignity and value and must be treated with respect. LGBT activists operate on a weak understanding of sexuality and ignore how scientific and empirical evidence refutes their claims. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT, where you can download this important resource free of charge. Again, go to frc.org/LGBT to learn more.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? Family Research Council is here to help with answers and insight from our experts. Our work in Washington, D.C. is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any issue that FRC stands for, issues like life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/askFRC and enter Ask FRC in the subject line. We'll consider your question, and you may also have a chance to be published on our blog. Again, that address is frc.org/askFRC. Thank you for standing with us.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. All right, close to 100 lawmakers are communicating their support for the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar's proposed rules that would ensure that Title X family planning funds are not directed to organizations that perform abortions in the same facility. This is this co-location rule we've talked about in the past. Goes back to Reagan had this in place, where it simply says, if you get federal money for family planning under the same roof, you can't do abortions. Makes perfect sense. Well, with us now is Congressman Ron Estes. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Kansas. Ron is one of the newer members of Congress, having served as the treasurer of Kansas. He serves on the Homeland Security Committee and Education and Workforce Committee. And he's leading on this effort, rallying his colleagues to communicate support for this rule to ensure tax dollars do not underwrite in any way abortion providers. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's good to be here.
This is pretty simple, and I know the deadline is tomorrow, so you're trying to get more members to sign on to this, to simply support the secretary. There's a window of public comment, and so you are collectively kind of gathering, as I understand, the comments from your members, the members of Congress, to say, hey, we support this rule. Makes sense. We don't want tax dollars going to support abortion.
That's right. I mean, letter was came out of the House and the Senate, basically encouraging Secretary Azar to actually do this process of revising the Title X rules back to the way they were during the Reagan era, that had withheld the Supreme Court challenge, and so actually is an appropriate way to handle it. And what we're wanting to do is get the House members and also get everybody across America to send in comments that they can to the Secretary, so that he has that information that Americans really support this plan, that really for Title X funding should be used for legitimate family planning services and making sure that organizations that perform abortions, that that's not used for that, because that specifically what the law said is it was for family planning and not for abortion services. And the other piece around there that dealing with this rule is how sexual abuse and or rape and incest also needs to be reported by the abortion providers. And we want to make sure that that's also addressed as part of this.
Now, this, again, the comment period ends tomorrow.
And this is one of those opportunities. Oftentimes we're calling on people to, all right, to send in these notes and let them know you don't like what they're doing. This is actually one of those things where you're encouraging them to say, yes, this makes sense, support this, this is why you should do it. And so this is an opportunity for the citizens that support the pro-life policies that this administration is putting in place. It's a chance for them to weigh in on that. It's also a chance for them to encourage their congressman to sign on to the letter that you've circulated.
That's right. And we encourage a lot of participation. We know, Americans are really compassionate people. We want to help. We want to use our taxpayer dollars to help make sure the right things get done and that family planning services are provided. But we don't think that the taxpayer dollars should be used for abortions. We don't think taxpayer dollars should be used for organizations that use that for, even in some cases, violate state law by not reporting suspected cases of abuse. And so we want to make sure that that gets reflected in the regulations that the Department of Health and Human Services mm-hmm. is doing.
Congressman Estes, I think latest count, I think you've got about 100 members that have signed on to your letter. If people want their member of Congress to join you in this, what should they do?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, they can reach out to their members' offices, either by calling their local district office or calling the office here in Washington and encouraging them to sign on to the letter. I'm one of the lead sponsors with several other members, Vicki Hartzler, Chris Smith, Diane Black. We're the four main people that are actually leading this effort to get members of Congress to sign on. But I would also encourage everybody, either as a member of a pro-life organization or on their own, reach out to the Department of Health and Human Services, and they've got a website that you can post comments on as well.
Yeah, and folks, we'll have that information at TonyPerkins.com. And I mean, the deadline is tomorrow at the end of business, end of the day. Tomorrow, the comment period will close, and therefore tomorrow is a chance to, I guess, the end of the month, but you want to get the comments in tomorrow. You've been active on this issue, Ron, in terms of speaking out on behalf of life. You mentioned earlier a letter a couple of weeks ago that you put together calling on the Department of Health and Human Services to investigate Planned Parenthood and them overlooking, basically turning a blind eye in the previous administration to what Planned Parenthood is doing in terms of minors and abortions and where there's abuse actually taking place.
That's right. And in the expectations of what we have written in the federal law is that Planned Parenthood or anybody, any organization should be following the federal laws and following the state laws. And one of the things for abortion providers like Planned Parenthood is that they should be following reporting laws within each state in which they operate for cases of suspected abuse. I mean, we're seeing case after case of minor children that are being brought in by a father or a stepfather or other family members or maybe a much older adult boyfriend who brings them in mm-hmm. and that the abortion provider, particularly Planned Parenthood, is not reporting that. And we just think that all organizations, including Planned Parenthood, should be following the law, whether it's a federal law or state law.
Congressman Estes, we're just about out of time, but one final question for you. You know, given this information and the move of Congress and the investigations that have shown the violations by Planned Parenthood, do you think Congress will eventually get to that point of taking or severing that tie between forced tie between taxpayers and Planned Parenthood?
I think we're looking at avenues. Obviously, the Title X rules and regulations, one of those things. That one of the other funding sources comes from Medicaid, and we want to make sure Medicaid is also used for legitimate medical reasons. And so we're really excited about what's going on with Health and Human Services and looking forward to Congress doing more to help supplement their efforts.
All right, Congressman Ron Estes, thanks so much for joining us today and appreciate your leadership on this.
All right, thank you.
All right, folks, coming up next, we'll all the talk about the midterm blue wave. We'll take a look at Tuesday's election. The wave doesn't appear as blue as some had hoped. That's next with Chris Wilson. Don't go away.
Hello. Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television and social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is not true? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate challenging topics in human sexuality. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
If you think anti-Semitism is a thing of the past, think again. In the last 3 years, over 1,700 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred on college campuses across the country. This new anti-Semitism is disguised simply as opposition to the State of Israel's policies toward Palestinians. But a closer look at these incidents reveal how Jewish college students are being attacked merely for believing that Israel should exist. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/antisemitism.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. Again, folks, you got an opportunity to stand with us as we come up to the end of our fiscal year, like tomorrow. You can go to tonyperkins.com and make a contribution there. Everything you give between now and tomorrow night will be matched. All right, we got some generous donors that have put forth a matching challenge. You can also, we got folks standing by to take your phone call, 800-225-4008. The time's almost up tomorrow. So if we want to keep this program going and expanding and reaching more people with the truth to counter the fake news, well, it only happens when folks like you stand with us. So go to tonyperkins.com or call 800-225-4008. All right, there were primary elections in seven states on Tuesday, Oklahoma, Colorado, Maryland, New York, and Utah, and runoffs in South Carolina and Mississippi. Now, interesting development we see continuing, and that is really what appears to be a civil war taking place in the Democratic Party, the Bernie Sanders wing versus what some are calling the professional Democrats. I'm not sure who those are, but that's what they call them. And it looks like the Democratic Party is struggling to find its identity in this midterm election. Joining us now to talk about this, Chris Wilson, CEO of WPA Intelligence. All right, Chris, what's the takeaway from Tuesday's elections?
Well, I think a couple of things, and you summed it up pretty nicely. It's one of them is the Democratic Party continues to move further and further to the left. Now, I think the difference between the way in which it is handled is you look at Joe Crowley's loss to someone who is a socialist, and that's not a pejorative term being used by me. That's how she defines herself. And it is remarkable the reaction of the mainstream media. This morning, the New York Times labeled it "A Star Is Born," and I'm sure the same thing was said about Dave Brat whenever he won in Virginia a few years back, right? They celebrated that win the same way. I think the movement of the Democratic Party to the not just the extreme left, but really the radical left, is the underreported story of this cycle. And it is, with a few exceptions, that continues to be the case. And what's interesting about it is there are I could give you probably five examples off the top of my head where, because of that nominating process, they have taken seats that, frankly, they would have been very competitive in. and made it to where they really don't have any chance at all because they've nominated Democrats that are just so far left. So I'd say that's story number one. The story number two that I don't hear anyone in the mainstream media talking about is the level of enthusiasm that continues to illustrate itself with Republican turnout in these primaries. And look, I will be the first to, it was the first to say on national news that Democrats had an enthusiasm advantage coming out of the special election season, looking back at 2017. And they, in some states, they continue to show enthusiasm. I mean, turnout was up pretty dramatically in Colorado and Oklahoma amongst Democrats. But you look at Texas, where they set a record for the lowest turnout in a gubernatorial primary since 1920. So it's more of a mixed message on the Democratic side, whereas on the Republican side, whether it is a runoff for governor in South Carolina or Governor McMaster won after Donald Trump went in for him on Monday, to a Republican primary for governor in Oklahoma or Colorado, where Republicans are turning out at the same level in an off year that they did in a presidential year. And Oklahoma is really the best example of that because Colorado is a presidential caucus, so you don't really have apples to oranges. But in Oklahoma, there are only 9,000 fewer votes cast in that primary for governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, and all the statewide offices than there were for the presidential campaign between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Senator Cruz won Oklahoma, I'll point out, since I was involved in that. Not to do a victory lap on it, but in the fact that you had that same level of turnout with nowhere near the level of attention being paid to it. I mean, it was almost like I happen to live in Oklahoma City, and the amount of coverage that was given to that primary paled in comparison to what was around the presidential campaign, which is not surprising. That's kind of the way it operates. But the fact that turnout was at that level, I think, shows that Republican enthusiasm moving into 2018 is back to where it was. It's where Republicans need to be able to do something dramatic, like hold the House in an off-year election, in which we are the party of in power and is, you know, would defy all odds there. So I think those are really the two most interesting stories coming out of the election season so far.
Which, as you've described them, the media is not talking. There's still this hope of a blue wave, which, mm-hmm. You know, it's a blue dribble. It's just not there. In fact, the Republicans do seem to be energized. I do want to go back to very quickly because we're almost out of time. But this District 14 race in New York that you made reference to, Cortez, against the incumbent Crowley there. If she was asked about whether or not she would support Nancy Pelosi, and she, I think it was on NPR, she wouldn't answer the question as if to say that Nancy Pelosi was, Nancy Pelosi was too mainstream for her. I mean, these are some radical individuals that the Democratic Party is putting forth as their new face.
They absolutely are. It is. They're going to start nominating people like that for Senate, and it's going to make it easier for Republicans to start to pick up some of these Senate seats. And that, you know, speaking of the Senate, Supreme Court, Kennedy stepping down is going to energize evangelicals at a level, I think, that we saw in 2016 elected Trump, and it's going to have a real impact.
I agree. In fact, my comment that's been picked up is that I think it's going to turbocharge the turnout because people know what's at stake. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. As always, appreciate your take on things.
Always happy to. Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, when we come back, Chris mentioned the Supreme Court. We're going to talk about that with Travis Weber, some decisions this week. We're going to talk about that and what the court is looking at going forward. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? Are you looking for more internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If you answered yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. If you think anti-Semitism is a thing of the past, think again. In the last 3 years, over 1,700 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred on college campuses across the country. Supposed anti-hate watchdog groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center have curiously turned a blind eye to this emerging campus threat, and this new anti-Semitism has flown under the radar. The perpetrators of the new anti-Semitism are primarily the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS, movement and the Students for Justice in Palestine. These two groups disguise their bigotry simply as opposition to the State of Israel's policies toward Palestinians. But a closer look at the language and tactics used by these groups reveals how Jewish college students are being attacked for believing that Israel should exist, or merely because they are Jews. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/antisemitism.
Hello, can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Let me remind you, folks, coming up to the end of our fiscal year, and this is where we need you to stand with us. If you'd like to be a part of partnering with us, anything you give between now and midnight on June 30th, that's Saturday, we've got some friends of FRC who have offered a matching challenge that will double your gift. All you have to do is give us a call right now, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can do it right there online. All right, let me mention, coming up July 1st, that's Sunday, Call to Fall, an opportunity for churches across the nation to, in unity, get on their knees, as 2 Chronicles 7:14 instructs us. If my people, that's us, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, forgive their sins, and heal their land. We don't need to wait for Washington or whatever state you're in for the state capital to do it. The church, we have the authority, we have the ability. And so Call to Fall is that opportunity. So I hope you'll participate. You can find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be in the Baton Rouge area, I'll be speaking at Milldale Baptist Church this Sunday for Call to Fall. You can go to TonyPerkins.com to find out more about that, but Milldale outside of Baton Rouge. And then next Sunday, I'll be at my home church at Greenville Springs Baptist Church. You can join us there as well. But I do hope you will be participating this weekend in Call to Fall. Again, for more details on all of that, go to TonyPerkins.com. Okay, the Supreme Court delivered several major decisions and announcements this week. Chief among them, obviously, that there's a retirement that is going to be a major issue. But we've seen the court decision on California. This is a crazy state. But California, it said they can't force pro-life pregnancy centers to promote abortion
as a health care option. I mean, as we've talked about, they were forcing, California was forcing these care pregnancy centers funded with private dollars by, in most cases, religiously motivated individuals. They were forcing them to post signs and communicate a message that was counter to their mission. Court said can't do that. By a 5-4 decision, wasn't big. Also had a decision, another 5-4 decision. There were several 5-4 decisions, which, again, makes this appointment to the court so important that the president's going to be making. But there was a decision on the president and his ability to protect the country by those who travel here. Those that they call it a travel ban, not really a travel ban. What it is, it simply requires a little more scrutiny from people, of people coming from countries that have a history of terrorism. Now, they've tried to make this into a ban on Muslims. Not so. In fact, you have North Korea on the list. Last time I checked, they were not a Muslim country. They were a totalitarian country, but not a Muslim country, communist. And Venezuela. Again, not a Muslim country. Joining me to talk about this is Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Been a busy week for those who follow the court.
It's been a very busy week, and the immigration case the court ruled on in favor of the executive branch, the Trump administration's policy, only one of a number of important cases coming out of the court. But definitely a good win to see.
All right, let's take that one first, because I want to tackle this because there have been those in the media that have made this into a religious issue, that this was a ban on Muslims.
Yeah, so this is an important issue to tackle, and there are a number of distinctives that distinguish this from other religion-type cases. As you mentioned, it's not a ban on Muslims. There are countries on the list that are not Muslim. At the same time, there are numerous Muslim countries that are not on the list, including Indonesia, the world's largest Muslim country. Iraq originally was recommended to be on the list, but upon consultation was taken off. They're a Muslim country. So obviously the administration is not targeting Muslim countries for the list. It's targeting security. And the fact that you only had five justices willing to say the executive branch has the authority to guarantee the security of the United States is alarming. We should not have five justices saying that. We should have nine justices saying that.
In my view, it's because it's from the Trump administration.
There is a Trump effect to this, and the dissenters focus on Trump's comments about Muslims. But comments do not mean law. And rightly so, the majority looked at the law, what the law requires, the provisions of the law, the text of the law, and said, look, the administration has broad authority, as every administration does, regardless of party, broad authority to regulate immigration. And just because there are several comments out there does not mean that authority is somehow disrupted. So this case is different because it concerns the security of the United States, very simply.
And to my other point on this, it's not a religious test. It's also not a ban. I mean, it requires a higher level of scrutiny, and it slows down the process, but it's not an absolute ban.
That's very true, and you can even see that in the nuance of how certain people from these countries can be let into the United States. As long as they go through certain steps, they can come in, and the law focuses on data and information that will guarantee our security by first requiring information about these people. It's not a ban saying you can't come in. It's saying we need to know who's coming into our country. And that's why this is far different from anything dealing with religious freedom domestically, as we've talked about. Everyone has religious freedom, but that doesn't mean that we can allow laws and policies to disrupt and demolish the order that governs our society and allows that religious freedom. If you don't have an orderly governmental system with one civil authority guaranteeing religious freedom, you can't have that for anyone then.
Yeah, and by the way, just a side note, I would mention that those countries that were on the list are countries that most of which are on another list, a list that tags them for their abuse of religious exercise and freedom.
This is an incredibly important point that we need our government and foreign policy professionals to recognize. You look at the threats that of the eight countries on that list, and there are many more that would fall into this category too, but these are security threats that correlate. These countries are threats, and this list correlates with countries that violate religious freedom domestically or have religious freedom struggles. Sometimes it's armed non-governmental groups. But the point is you have religious freedom problems correlating to a national security threat.
Yeah.
Unless we get this, we are going to be dealing with problems decades down the road.
And that's why it's so important that we have an administration that in its foreign policy is promoting the issue of religious freedom.
Yes, very, very much so. We saw the effect that when President Trump raised this issue with the Nigerian president. I think, you know, the discussions with India coming up are an opportunity to raise this issue with them, raise it with other governments so they know we care about this issue. We're not going to let it slide under the rug.
All right, let's talk about another 5-4 decision that came out, and that's regarding a 2015 California law that NIFLA brought to the forefront because this is a league of pro-life care pregnancy centers. About 1,200 of them that were being forced in California to promote abortion in their care pregnancy centers. 5-4 decision, court said no, violation of free speech.
Yeah, really good to see this ruling. It's troubling that, again, it's only 5-4, but the five justices in the majority basically saying, look, the First Amendment prohibits the government from making individuals and entities proclaim a message against their beliefs. That's what this came down to, forcing them to proclaim a pro-abortion message. And the court thankfully struck that down. It did not buy the argument that somehow this, because this is called professional speech, that it's somehow subjected to less scrutiny. Rightly so, the court applied a high-level scrutiny, and this was a good free speech ruling along with other ones that have come out in recent days.
Again, underscoring a 5-4 decision. So you have four justices that were okay with the state of California trampling upon First Amendment freedoms, I would say, of both speech and religion, because most of these organizations are motivated by their faith.
Yeah, and we see the similarities with California's attempt to ban counseling, biblical counseling, for people wanting to deal with same-sex attraction. Look, if this is a five-justice majority adhering to this reasoning, it's critically important that we have a justice who adheres to the originalist interpretation of the Constitution, which is going to allow freedom of speech and religion to flourish in other contexts. The day after those decisions came down, another 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court said you cannot force union employees to compel them to give dues to an organization they disagree with. The court overturned decades-old precedent doing that, again, strengthening, upholding the First Amendment, saying government does not have a good reason to compel speech.
But again, I want to underscore the 5-4 decision in that case, another free speech case. So you actually have a number of free speech issues that have made their way to the court and a very narrow margin of victory for the First Amendment.
Yeah, in these cases, we have five justices willing to defend free speech, five justices willing to defend the administration's authority to regulate the safety of the country. This is a narrow margin. It's too narrow. And it's critical that we have justices on the court who defer to the Constitution, look to the Constitution and its text, and don't go beyond that.
Part of this division in the court, is it because the court has become politicized in that? I mean, when you look at these issues, abortion, obviously, a politically divided issue. You got Republicans, in fact, increasingly. I mean, article out actually just today talking about how the Republicans, with the retirement of Charlie Dent, a Republican congressman who's pro-choice, the Republican Party is actually not going to have any pro-choice members in their ranks in Congress. And of course, the Democratic Party not having any pro-life, with the exception of, I think, maybe one now. The court also kind of reflecting that there's the Democratic side, Republican side, not supposed to be that way. And as we look for a replacement, we're not looking for an R, we're looking for a constitutionalist. We're looking for a C, somebody who will abide by the context of the Constitution.
Exactly right. We should not think about justices as conservative or liberal. We should think about them as constitutionalist or not, constitutionalist or activist. And we want someone going to adhere to the text of that Constitution. This is a function of decades ago, the court starting to drift from this. and engaging in a bigger role, ruling in these controversial social issues, really legislating on them, right. producing controversy. It was never meant to be this way. We need to get back to deferring to the legislative and executive branch as the Constitution intends, and we'll have less of this hot-button political drama around the court.
And in all honesty, in all candor, I should say, that sometimes doesn't work well for the conservative movement, because in most time, 95% of the cases it does. But there's been some cases in the last decade or so where conservatives on the court would come down a different way because of what the Constitution says on an issue.
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, for those who are honest about their inquiry into this issue and they look at how justices come down on these things, they'll notice that the popular conception of a conservative or liberal justice does not always fly, is not always borne out in the evidence. And this is because justices who are true constitutionalists are faithfully adhering to the text of that document, and they're not going to go beyond that. So that doesn't always break down in what the popular conception of conservative or liberal right. is. We want someone who adheres to the law, does not decides the case before them, does not step out and actively engage in law creation or legislative efforts from the bench. We want strict decisions on the law and the facts before the court. That's all we really want.
And I'm good with that.
Right.
Because I think if we want to change the law, we do it through the legislative process.
We do it through that process, or for the Constitution, through a constitutional amendment. There's a process on the books, and we shouldn't allow judges to step in and usurp that authority and change it themselves.
But again, I would say that with a justice who will interpret the Constitution as it was written and intended, the original intent of that Constitution, 95% of the time, they're going to come down on a side that we would describe as conservative, because conservative, by nature, by definition, is to conserve, is to preserve that which is the foundation of this country.
That's true. And I think it's also related to a view of government authority as bringing out the worst in human nature. If you allow a human being in power to sort of just expand and balloon that power, it's going to produce an imbalance that violates the balance of power that our Constitution has set up. For instance, all these activist rulings have taken authority out of the voters in the states. When you declare an issue on sexuality as a constitutional right, you're taking power away from those voters, disenfranchising them, and that's really a problem.
Very quickly, about 30 seconds, what kind of cases are in the pipeline potentially for the Supreme Court, which underscores the importance of this replacement?
Yes, we have a case on a large cross on a veterans memorial. It's part of public land. This case is currently pending before the court. Crucial that the court allows this to stand under the Establishment Clause. Other pro-life and Planned Parenthood defunding cases or regulation issues around Planned Parenthood and pro-life issues are coming up. So a lot of important cases.
And so it's going to be important to have a constitutionalist take the place of Anthony Kennedy on the court.
Very true.
All right. Travis Weber, as always, great to have you on the program, and appreciate all you do here at Family Research Council.
Thanks, Tony.
And by the way, as of Sunday, his new title is Vice President of Policy. So congratulations.
Thank you again.
All right. All right, folks, out of time. Let me encourage you, visit the website, TonyPerkins.com. And as I mentioned, if you're in the Baton Rouge area this Sunday, I'll be at Milldale Baptist Church. Check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Also got folks still standing by to take your call, 800-225-4008. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.